Hello everyone, it's Anna Gray and I'm here to talk to you about our project MDARA, which is the Emergency Digitisation of At-Risk Archives project, which began at State Records in December 2015, last year. I'm an archivist and I took on the role of lead archivist on this project because I'd been working with the digitisation of our collection for the past few years before that, so it kind of was a natural progression, I guess. Why did we decide to do this? So we've been quite aware for some time of the need to transform those projects within our collection that are at risk of immediate deterioration. Digitisation of fragile physical archives is a recognised means of preserving these at-risk assets. Deterioration occurs largely through two mechanisms, and that is the chemical degradation of the physical medium, so the breaking down of the medium itself, and or the technological obsolescence, so the equipment needed to read the format is becoming outdated and more hard to access. The formats targeted by MDARA were largely audiovisual formats that were at risk due to either one or both of these factors. So these are the formats that we were targeting. Film, so that's old cine film, cassettes, magnetic audio reels, DVC pros, video, computer media, jail books and a Martin Place Siege tributes collection. You'll notice, if you've got a lot of familiarity with at-risk formats, that acetate negatives, which is very well known for being at risk due to chemical degradation, is not part of the project. The reasoning behind this is largely due to a need to cast some limits around what the project was going to do, and the decision was to concentrate on those formats that State Records had absolutely no capacity to digitise in-house. So most of the formats targeted in MDARA require specialist machines to read the material and copy the material into a digital format. So as I said, the decision was made to concentrate largely on audiovisual formats that require specialist vendors to do the digitisation for us. However, there are two exceptions to this, and these are, as I mentioned, the jail books and the Martin Place Siege material. So this is the only laugh in the whole thing, the jail book reference to Anna Gray. I thought it was appropriate. So the jail photographic description books are their bound volumes, which were held by jails around New South Wales. Each page within the volumes contains a photograph of the prisoner and then the personal details and their criminal history as well down the bottom there. So the jail books were included in MDARA because they are a fragile set of series that are heavily accessed by the public and of great interest. In addition, they were seen as a quick and easy part of the project because we thought much of the groundwork for getting these digitised had already been done, because in the previous years we'd been doing a indexing project for these jail books and microfilming them. So we thought we had all the data kind of all ready to go and we could send them out quite easily. And we thought the index could benefit greatly from the addition of digital images. So rather than just having, you know, searching the index and finding the text that was related to it, you could have a pull up a digital image. However, a little more work in terms of the conservation required and listing was needed than we first realised. But as with many things, it's not until you start them that you realise what the reality is of what you're proposing to do. So the other anomaly in this project was the Martin Place Siege material. So this is material that was left in Martin Place after the Lindt Cafe siege. The material was included in MDARA because it had recently been received and contained material that State Records until now hadn't really had to deal with. Things such as stuffed toys and scented candles, chocolates, homemade posters and cards. The items had already been digitised by Iron Mountain before we received them. So what MDARA was aiming to do was to have a conservation survey done to determine the specific requirements and the unique requirements required for these to be stored. So that was a slightly different tack. So this is the workflow. It's not very well. You can't really see it very well there. This is the workflow that we identified for the project. So there's various steps we aim to go through for each stream of work. Items were tracked through the workflow in batches. So we broke them up into their formats. So we were tracking within formats and then within batches within those formats. For example, our video collection that we targeted, which was around 2,352 videos, went out to vendors in four batches, and then we tracked them as V1, V2, V3, V4, so we know exactly what we're up to. Similarly, magnetic reels went out in batches, MR1, MR2, and cassettes, film, etc., so in the same way. The first step in the workflow was discovery. So this was the listing stage, And here we were creating lists of the physical items we wanted digitised and collecting any metadata that we could glean from the physical items. So this is an example of one of our batch spreadsheets, kind of broken up so it can fit on the slide. So we developed spreadsheets, a template that was specific to each format, and this is the one that we developed for videos. It's divided into several sections, and the first section in green and purple is the data that we collected to provide to the vendor. The orange fields were data that we wanted the vendor to add as they digitised, and the bright green fields are the QA fields that were filled in later when the digital entities were returned, and our team of QA staff had a look at what vendors had done to check that we had received back the right material. The complexity of the material was increased by the number of sub-formats we identified within each of the broader format groupings. For example, the videos it revealed held 10 sub-formats. So there's some of the examples of the sub-formats we had. So we had VHS, Beta, U-matic, half-inch videos, 1-inch videos, 2-inch videos, DCTs, Hi-8s, mini DVs and VHSCs. Some of which was my first introduction to these. So it was all a bit of an eye-opener for everyone. In addition to listing the items, the discovery phase included the writing of requests for quotation or RFQs for each format. Included in each of the RFQs was things like the physical formats we wanted digitised, the number of items we were expecting to be digitised, the safe handling of items, so we expected the vendors to handle the items to our archival standards. The digital formats that we wanted to receive the items back in. For example, with all streams of work, we wanted to receive both a digital preservation copy and a digital access copy from the vendor. The metadata that we wanted the vendor to collect, because a lot of the metadata you could only really glean from viewing the item, so we were hoping that they would be able to provide a bit more back for us. And things also such as delivery, how things were going to be delivered, equipment and security, so how secure were the premises and the items when they were there. One of the key factors within each scope of works was defining the file types we wanted the digital copies to be returned in. For all items digitised, as I said, we wanted a preservation copy and an access copy returned. Some of the key considerations when determining the preservation file was ensuring the file format chosen was an open file format, that is a non-proprietary format, that it was interoperable and readable using readily available open source software, and also that it was a transferable format. When creating the digital preservation version, we're also aware of the need to ensure that the essential characteristics of the analog recording were maintained and preserved. That is, we wanted to ensure the authenticity and integrity of the original record, as well as making it accessible and available over time. Determining what the digital preservation format and access copies would take for some streams of work was very simple. For example, we were very familiar with digitising documents and photographs, so the JAL books was pretty easy. We knew that we wanted a 75 dpi JPEG access version and a 600 dpi uncompressed TIFF for the preservation version. But for other formats, this was really the first time we'd been doing any large-scale digitisation of this type of thing. So determining what our digital preservation and access copies was going to be was, in some cases, quite time-consuming. I think the films probably proved to be the most complex, with each reel throwing up different possibilities. We have got a myriad of different things within our film collection, it seems. We've got 35 mils, 8 mils, 16 mils, positive, negative versions, and component films and release print films, so the variations went on and on. So we consulted and leaned heavily on our digital archives team for advice, and I'm very thankful to them for this. Without them, I don't think we could have got as far as we did. Our head of conservation also called in some favours for advice from the National Film and Sound Archive and other institutions with detailed backgrounds in digitising audiovisual materials. And all advice was very welcomed. And as with many things, the more you find out about them, the more complex they seem to become. But after many discussions, we did work out what specs we wanted for our films, and this is what we ended up with, so it's quite detailed. So we had one for the release and one for component prints, so to make it very clear as to what we wanted. Once written, each RFQ for each stream of work, or each format, went out to potential vendors. The vendor's response was then reviewed, and the vendor determined for each format. Once vendors were determined, the delivery and preparation phase could begin. This stage involved grouping the items into workable batches, barcoding, packing the items, and ensuring we had a hard drive or NAS to deliver to the vendor so that the digital entities generated could be delivered back to us. It also involved ensuring that our batches from each stream that were going out to different vendors, we wanted to be sure that they could complete as much metadata about each item so that we could receive as much back as well. So this was a really busy period of time with lots of batches going in all different directions. So we had vendors around Sydney and also as far afield as Melbourne. So this is going back to our workflow diagram, which you can't really see very well. Also covered, as well as digitising and preparing all these items to be digitised, another thing that we were also aware of was the archival context of these items. So in addition to tracking the batches through the digitisation process, an integral part of digitisation is recording and maintaining the archival context of the items being digitised. This involved, at the very least, ensuring details about the items were updated in our various systems, such as the evaluation register and our collection management system, and later ensuring the items had archival context recorded in more detail within our collection management system, which would allow us then to later link the digital items back to the relevant series. So this process of documenting all the archival series is still ongoing, and it will probably continue to go for a little while longer yet. So I think we had around 149 archival series that contained MDARA items, and of these, around 55 new series were being created. So once the items were digitised and the digital files were returned to state records, either on a NAS or an external hard drive, the physical items, in most cases, were kept on site by the vendor until we'd gone through all of our quality assurance processes. So this meant that any potential problems that we discovered through our QA processes could be queried and checked by the vendor with reference to the original item if need be. And our QA processes did throw up some issues. For example, we got this one returned to us. It's quite clear what the problem with this one is. So due to the fragility of the jail books, our conservation team specified that they couldn't use glass to hold down the page during the digitisation process, and we said that if necessary that they could use conservation approved weights to assist the holding of pages in place while imaging the books. However, the first batch we received back, the vendor was obviously quite a little bit paranoid about all this, I think, I don't know, and they'd overly used weights, and there was weights all over things. And obviously this one they'd snapped, before the person who'd put the weight down got their hand out of the way. The vendor also had problems achieving the preservation specifications that we had stipulated in our RFQ. So we had to work through these issues, but it did mean that this stream of work got delayed as we worked through some of the issues that we came up with on the way. We also had some other oddities turn up with the jail book digitisation process. So this is one. When I first saw that one, I thought it was like a little scar on his cheek. But then as we zoomed in, we realised it was a fly of some sort on there. Apart from these glaringly obvious things, other problems that we encountered were things like digital IDs being applied incorrectly. So everything got its own unique digital ID as it went out, and the vendor had to apply that to the digital entity. So some of them had been applied incorrectly, and then they would have to be corrected either by us or by the vendor themselves. With cassettes, videos and films, when we encountered sound or vision issues, we then had to determine if the issue was with the original item, because obviously some of these are quite old by now, or whether something had gone wrong in the digitisation process. Depending on how good the vendor had been, and that varied quite considerably between vendors, how good they were with adding to our spreadsheets that we provided, it could be easy to determine whether it was with the original or with the digital, or a problem with the digital entity, because they'd made mention of it in the spreadsheet. And if that was the case, if it was with the original item, that was fine, we had no problem with the issue. If it hadn't been mentioned, we'd have to go back to the vendor to clarify whether or not it was with the original or whether there was a problem with the digitisation process. Another issue we encountered with a small number of items was that the content of the tape, video or film didn't seem to contain what the title of the item had led us to believe to be on it. So in this instance, again, we'd go back to the vendor and determine whether there'd been a mix-up at their end and they'd mix and matched something, or if indeed the content of that item and the information we held about the physical attribute was incorrect. So basically, what someone had written on the cassette didn't actually match what was on the cassette, and that did happen a few times. In other cases, it was discovered that the original item had deteriorated to a point where the contents of the item were no longer readable or retrievable, and there were other items vendors discovered were blank during the digitisation process, and therefore no digital file returned. And that happened quite a few times, so we have been holding blank tapes in our collection and not really realising it. So in addition to reviewing the digital entities for potential problems, QA staff are also tasked with identifying content issues, such as coarse language or disturbing content. For example, some of the computer media contained autopsy images, and we have police video content of accident scenes, which can be quite confronting. After all QA issues were dealt with, for each given batch, the physical items were then returned to us, and the digital entities were ready to be ingested. It's intended that the preservation versions will be ingested in the digital state archive, and the access versions will be stored in our digital asset management system, which is impending soon. Negotiations and scoping for a dam are still underway, but we're hoping that we will have a dam in the next 6 months or so that can deal with the variety of digital formats that we've generated, and will be capable of coping with the growing size of our digital collections. So this is a table that shows you the number of items we digitised for each format, and some basic statistics, including the predicted storage capacity for the whole project, and number of items digitised, the access and preservation copies that we deemed to be needed for each one, and the size of the data we expected to be returned. Over the course of the project, approximately 60,000 digital preservation files were returned from vendors. So it's quite a lot. So will you be seeing a whole new lot of digital content popping up on our website? If the digitised content is open to public access, we will hope to get them online and accessible over the next couple of years. A lot of the material, however, that's been digitised is closed to public access and won't be going online. So things like police interviews, ombudsman's inquiries, recordings of court proceedings, coroner's inquiries, and records relating to royal commissions. The kinds of series that are open to public access and we hope to make accessible online include things like the jail books, and many of the films and videos. So many of these were produced by government agencies for educational or promotional reasons. So to finish up, a couple of lessons learnt. We have realised the importance of determining the scope of work for a project and not overestimating what can be achieved in a given period of time. The amount of work involved in this was huge, and I don't think we fully realised the intricacies of the work involved before we started. We also learnt the importance of getting staffing right and bringing in the right people at the right stage of the project. Often things need to be redone if your processing staff are on board before project leads are in place, so that sort of basic project management stuff. Also recognising the need for staff with specialist knowledge was key to successfully completing a project of this nature. An additional concern for any digitisation project is the importance of planning your digital storage, preferably before embarking on a project, especially one of this scale. And last but not least, putting in place processes to deal with the potential of staff viewing and listening to content they find disturbing, sometimes referred to as vicarious trauma. As much as possible, the content of the items that were being digitised was identified before it went through the digitisation process. When it came time for our internal QA staff to view and check the files, those staff who didn't feel comfortable with viewing certain types of content did not QA those items. However, for some material, the extent of the content was not clear from the title, and so there was potential for some QA staff to be caught unawares as to what they were going to be viewing. And due to this, staff were made aware of avenues to seek counselling if they felt that was needed. On the plus side, we've learnt a whole lot more about the diverse range of formats that we hold in the collection. I think we know more about these unique formats than ever before. And I think we've undoubtedly saved many items from being irretrievably lost. So the knowledge that we've gained, the lessons we've learnt, can inform future digitisation projects at State Records, and I certainly think we're better placed now to do digitisation at this scale than we ever have been before. So that's all I've got.